I want you to turn to John chapter 18. And if you were with us last week, you know I left off right when Jesus was arrested. And this week we're actually going to skip a little bit, just so you know what happens in between there. His best buddy, one of his three best buddies, Peter, denies him three times. Right? We're not going to get into all of that, but it's terrible. And it's hard on Jesus. And ultimately, Jesus is brought in front of Caiaphas, who is the high priest. He is the Jew of Jews, and Jesus is going to have to testify for himself. And there's 613 laws, and they're finding all kinds of laws that he has broken, particularly that he claims to be the Son of God. But this morning, I want to fast forward to verse 33. And essentially the Jews, the Jewish leaders are now talking to the Roman leaders. And then Jesus now is going to talk to a state leader, right? And I want us to think about, as Christians, how do we deal with power? And in this instance, political power. I mean, what does Jesus do with politics? Because Jesus is going to talk to a governor. And if Jesus were to talk to the governor of the state of Florida or the president of the United States, how would he interact with them? How would he interact, and how would that politician interact with Jesus? What does Jesus do with power? And we're not going to just talk about political power this morning, but when he interacts with the governor of this huge part of Rome, what would Jesus say to Donald Trump? What would Jesus say to the leader of any major nation? How would they interact? And how would that state leader interact with Jesus? What is this going to look like? Because a lot of us have very strong convictions about political power and what that should look like. We have very strong belief. And you could go a lot of different ways with this particular passage. I've heard so many different sermons on this, but when you think about Pilate, you got to think about Rome. And when you think about Rome, you think about political power. And here is Pilate, after talking to the Jews, he's going to talk with Jesus. What's this interaction going to be like? What is the governor of Rome going to say to Jesus? So here we're going to start in John 18, 33 through 35. And I want you to put on your thinking caps here, because part of this is going to be a little bit more heady this morning. So Pilate, the governor of Rome, right, then went back inside the palace. He summoned Jesus and he asked him very simply, are you the king of the Jews? Right? If you were to think of the question underneath the question, he wants to know this. Are you a revolutionary? Should I worry about you? Because political power is real. It's a real thing in our world. And if you were to have to define what political power is, just a straight up definition for political power, how about this? It's the power to make people do things or behave a certain way. It's the power to pass laws and enforce laws. That's what legislative political power is. And the question is, okay, when Jesus is asked, are you the king of the Jews, right? Are you about this type of power? Are you ultimately seeking this type of power? You know, what's Jesus going to say? Is that your own idea? Jesus responds. Or did others talk to you about me? Where's this coming from, Pilate? What is this? Am I a Jew? Pilate responds, obviously not. Your own people, Jesus, and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it you have done? Next slide. Jesus says, here's his response. My kingdom... You want to talk about power? You want to talk about political power? Well, Jesus says, my kingdom is what? My kingdom is not of this world. And if you stopped it right there, essentially it feels like Jesus is saying, Well, no. If you're asking me, am I a king? If I have put none, no, I'm not a king. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place. So initially it feels like he's saying no, but then he's kind of saying, well, I'm a king, but you know what? I'm not what you're thinking. I'm not a political leader. And if I was, the people that followed me, they'd be fighting right now. They'd be fighting right now because that's what would matter. You know, Christianity isn't about a strong man that took power, right? What is Christianity about? It's about a weak person who what? Gave up power. Think about what one of his best buddies did right before this. They came to arrest him, and what did Peter do? He took out a knife and cut off a dude's ear. I mean, he went and he said, Peter, I know what you're doing. There's the Roman Empire, and you want power, and part of magisterial power, the power of the magistrate, is to have an army, and you cut off a guy's ear. That is not what I'm here to do. So here, dude, Malchus, there's your ear back, right? We got this wrong. How do you do, what do you do with political power, Jesus? Because you know what? Political power will make people do things. I mean, that's what we should do as Christians, right? Make people do Christian things. Use political power for Jesus. And Jesus is, wait. He's like, I'm coming to actually change the way people live, but I'm not a political leader, right? I'm not here to legislate who I am onto people's hearts. Think about the history of the world. What area has, you know, had the most legislated, right now, the most legislated state religion, state Christian religion? You think right now in the world, you know, within recent history, it's Europe. It's Europe. I went on a missions trip to Manchester, England. I've told you guys this before. And we get into London, and we go see St. Paul's Cathedral. And it's the most beautiful, I mean, unbelievable church. And you know what? That place right now runs from tourists. You watch a worship service at St. Paul's Cathedral? I mean, I saw one going on, and it was maybe 20 people. And it was sad. 1.5% of the English population goes to church. 1.5%. It is dead spiritually. That's why we went. We knew a number of people. I got to preach in Moulton, England, in this little village that had an awesome church. And it was Pentecost Sunday, and I got to climb up these steps. It'd be like I was up as maybe as high as that video projection screen up there. And I got to like look down on, I mean, that wasn't the goal, is to look down on people. But I'm looking down, and there's about, you know, a solid 13 people. I mean, solid 13, no doubt. At least 13. I'd give you that much. And it felt like, what? This is Pentecost Sunday when the Holy Spirit comes down and this feels dead. It had been state functioned. What happens over time when you are forced to make Jesus, you know, to have Jesus be a part? You're forced by your father or your mother, right? Or your grandparents. It's forced on you. Don't hear me wrong, parents. Don't hear me wrong at all. It's not bad to bring people to church. But how many times have I heard this? I just had two kids and I got to get back into church because that's the way I was. I have these memories of going to church and we were there. What did you think of church? I couldn't stand it, but we were there. I didn't like it at all. Nothing was going on in me spiritually, but that's the way I was raised. And so I want to raise my kids that way. What? I mean, Shoot, when they leave, when they graduate high school, no wonder, right? No wonder I'm sitting there in churches in Tallahassee thinking, where is everybody? Everyone said they were raised. Everyone in my dorm said they were raised going to church, and now no one goes to church in college because they don't have to. What do you mean you don't have to? Is that the reason why you went to church? Is because it was legislated for you? It was forced upon you? The state forced it, or the state of your parents forced it on you? And Jesus says, look, Pilate, you're about this type of power, political power, the ability to make people do things. Imagine this. Let's rewind 200 years in America. And let's say you came up with this idea in 1817. You know what? I've realized that my 2 5th grade boys are forced to work in factories. And I don't think 10-year-old boys should be forced to work in factories. It seems wrong. It seems wrong. They're making, you know, a nickel an hour, and they're working from sun up to sun down. And let's say I'm going to write a bill, and I'm going to try to get it passed. What would people have done 200 years ago if you wrote that law? They'd have been like, well, you can try, but that ain't going to pass. Why? Just the way things are. It's the way things are. It's the way America worked in 1817. You had kids doing all kinds of stuff. It was the Industrial Revolution, right? Why, or what makes a law pass? It's when minds are changed, right? When fundamentally the view that kids should be treated this way, and that truth has to bleed into society and be believed. A whole worldview had to change on what to do with child labor laws. I mean, we think that's so, like, are you kidding me? 2017. No, not in 1817. That's just the way it was. It took time. And so here is Jesus. And when Jesus comes, he goes, I've come to give some truth because my kingdom isn't of this world. I don't see it that way. To Jesus, next slide, political power was confining. Are you talking, wait, political power? Okay, yeah, that's a legitimate power. That's not nothing necessarily bad, but that confines the type of power that I'm about, Pilate. I know you're about political power. And as Christians in the church, how many times have we rested our hopes on political power? If we can just legislate things, that will change the world. And Jesus is interacting with a legislator, with a political figure, and he's saying, no, you don't get it. So what happens here? Jesus comes and he dies, right? He comes and he dies, and the church starts. And you know what happens? People all throughout Asia Minor begin to, you know, small groups of people begin to meet in people's homes and open up the Bible and read it and break bread together. And if you needed a truck, you gave your truck to that person. If they needed a pair of khakis, you gave your khakis away. If they needed a babysitter, your daughter babysat for them. If they needed somebody to play with, even your kid, everything, whatever you had was theirs. Whatever theirs was, the other person's, however that works. And all of a sudden, these families begin to see how beautiful life Imago Dei was. You see, in Rome, if you had 5 kids and you didn't want 6 and you had a 6th kid, you could just kill your kid. And that would happen. People would simply take their 6 kids because they only wanted 5, and they would put them in the middle of the square and they say, I'm not going to deal with that kid anymore. So there was a ton of orphans, right? And particularly girls, because they would be very pragmatic in the Roman Empire. I do not want another girl. And so they would either end the life or leave the life somewhere. And here's what began to happen, is that Christians begin to take these orphans into their homes. And Christians were the first ones that said, you know what, I don't believe in abortion, I believe in life. And then all of a sudden, here's what happened, is that where it was perfectly acceptable for a man to have a couple of trysts on the side, a couple of extra women, a couple of girlfriends, some mistresses, and the wives, you know, dealt with it. All of a sudden, they began, the dominant Roman culture began to look at this counterculture, this Christian culture, and they began to realize, oh, wait, you don't have affairs? You don't? I mean, sex was just inside of marriage. And you know what I've noticed? If you keep sex inside of marriage, the family stays together. And what I've noticed is that Christian families are strong. And so the dominant Roman licentious culture began to look at this very conservative Christian culture that loved the family, and they began to be affected by the family. And women flocked to the churches because they were given dignity. They weren't treated as meat or as simply a means to an end. And man, I tell you what, in AD 60, 70, AD 150, AD 200, AD 250, all of a sudden, man, this dominant Roman culture looked at this Christian culture, even though that they were smaller and counterculture, and they said, I think that looks very attractive because my life is chaos. I've lived under the mantra of when in Rome, do as the Romans do, and my life is chaos. I want that. But the thing is they weren't just conservative, right? They were also liberal. These Christians were liberal because they didn't care about race. They didn't care about socioeconomic class, because here's what the gospel says. The gospel says everybody is a sinner. Everyone is equal. I will give my money to those with less money. I'm going to do that. And all of a sudden you had this, what? A Christianity that was conservative and liberal. What do you do with that? And then you know what happened? Orphans and widows became loved. Christians began to have more influence. And a dude named Constantine, about 300 AD, came into power. And he didn't, a lot of people think Constantine made Rome Christian. No, he didn't legislate Christianity. All he did was what? He acknowledged what was already happening. And then he made laws that said, okay, Christianity is the religion of Rome. And that's how Rome became Christianized, right? That's how Rome had this, you know, the Cairo then on their shields. But inevitably, when you legislate something, it begins to feel plastic. And when you're a 15-year-old boy and you've got to go to church because the state legislates it, and you're sitting there because you have to and nothing's happened in your heart at all, you're just doing because mom and dad tell you, people begin to just check a box like coming to church on Sunday. I got to go to church because I got to go to church. And you know what happened then? Amazingly, people said, I don't feel like this is real anymore. So they started going to the desert. And people did weird things like dig holes in the desert. And guys would just sit out there and pray. Or build a pole and sit on top of a pole. Simon the Stylite did this. And you know what people would do who were in the city, you know, in the city area? They would be inspired by these people out in the desert. And they were called the Desert Fathers. And they would go out in droves and stare at Simon the Stylite or some dude that dug a hole. And they, because they would pray all day. And you know what that was the onset of? That began the start of the monastic movement, monasteries, right? Guys that just went away from the city, because if you legislate Christianity, it takes the heart out of it. I want to do it for real. And so all of a sudden you had this big movement of monks, right? And nuns. I'm going to go and I'm going to chant Psalms because I want to. Jesus was the truth. And he just wanted to bear witness to the truth. He didn't want to legislate anything. And when Pilate asked him, are you the king of the Jews? What are you here to do? He says, I'm here to bring truth, but I'm not here to legislate truth. I'm not here to legislate or heavy hand or strong arm your heart, because that's not what the gospel does. And so he said, no to politics, but you know what? I'm going to have a big, big impact. There's a place for politics, but hey, ultimately what he was saying was politics and the legislation of things, they happen downstream. What first has to happen, it's got to go on in your heart. And so when we think about politics today, when we think about our leaders, our political leaders that do have power to enforce and come up with laws, what does the scripture say? What does Jesus say to this political power? That doesn't mean that you can't be part of it, but we have to look at this because for him, political power was confining. Next verse, Jesus answered to Pilate, "You say that I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth, to legislate something. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." And then here's what Pilate says, and he shows his cards. What is truth? Right? What is truth? Because underneath that statement, what do we see about Pilate? Hey, what's important is power, Pilate says. Hey, you know, truth, okay, yeah. But power is what matters, right? That's ultimately what we're talking about. What do you do with the power that God has given you in life? Have you listened to any of these books, Hillary Clinton, the books that she writes about, you know, the election? Have you, I mean, we can hear this in Donald Trump, right? We can hear this in others of our past political leaders. It's this. Yeah, man, I want to help. I do. I get this idea, and it's not the same as this person's idea, but it's this idea, and I want to help, and I think this is the best system. This is the best way. Yeah, okay, you like it that way, but I think it's this way. And I think if we run the country this way or run the world this way, this will be better. And there is a true, I believe, altruistic in so many different politicians, a desire to help. But what comes with the office? Power. What happens when you become a pastor of a church? You get some influence that you've never had before. And your desire is to help people and for the gospel to go out and for people to get it. But then there is what? Jesus says, but you have to remember your heart, it can be so deceitful. And this is when you hear in the vulnerable parts of those interviews where she talks about losing, right? You hear the anger, I have power. And what's underneath that? What's on the flip side of that? There is some good help, but it's this look. I need this office. I need to be a pastor. You need whatever area of influence that you have. I need that because part of it is helping. That's right. But the other part of it is what? I need to prove to myself and I need to prove to others that I am worth something. Like, I am really worth something. And so when I landed this office in the House of Representatives and I want to promote this bill, yes, but you know what? I also don't want to lose the power and the influence that I have. And we know that this is what power can do. This is what politics can do. This is what your influence, it can affirm us. And it feels so good. It feels like, man, kind of what Paulie said, there's this hole. And when I have this office or I am a reverend or you are whatever you are, there's something about affirmation that this influence gives me. And I mean, I did a quick kind of survey on the internet about different leaders talking about their office, particularly political leaders. And you know what they said is if they didn't realize that the second part of power, in other words, they thought power was just really about them helping people and using that power for good, and they didn't realize, they couldn't kind of forecast that they would really want to hang on to that, that this part would, in the long run, kind of overwhelm the second part. Because if you look at the leaders in Scripture, and if you even look underneath what Pilate is saying. Pilate's saying, yes, I want to govern and help Rome, the Pax Romana. I want to build roads. I want to have good relationships with these other countries so that our economy can do well. But ultimately, I do not want to lose the position of being governor. I mean, Herod, he wanted to kill, right? He wanted to kill little kids because he knew one of them would grow up. He heard one of them would grow up to be king, to be the leader, and he was the leader. And so he built these crazy forts. Read about powerful men and women in history and what they will do. Abused power is what? It's power as an end. It becomes the end. And what Jesus is saying here, is like, look, if you forget, if power forgets truth, what happens? It morphs into a means of self-affirmation. It does. It's a way in which you will get self-affirmation. And the scriptures tell us something completely different. They say, look, here's what I want you to do. This is what Jesus knew he had to have. Before he took his first step into ministry, the skies opened up and his father looked down on him and said, this is my man, my son, with whom I'm well pleased. And I can almost see Jesus getting like this big grin, being like, okay, that's it, right? That's it. So yesterday I was throwing batting practice to our team, and this one awesome kid who's never played baseball before, and I wasn't throwing very hard, and this kid gets up there. It's really only the second time we've had batting practice, and he missed the first few times, and he was trying his hardest, and anything I said, he was like, okay, yeah, you know, and then he hits one hard, and I'm like, that was it. He's like, pulls the bat back, I throw another one, rips another one. Pal, don't change a thing. Boom. And then you just see his face, and he's like, I mean, like, everything in this kid was like, my coach just said I hit a ball hard, and I don't want to do it again. He says, don't change a thing. I'm not going to change the things. I'm really happy. I'm really happy, man. And I'm just really happy. And it was like, you know what it was? I told him, I said, you're doing it, man. And it's like he felt delighted in, and he just wanted to stay there and do it again and again. And that, as I was thinking about this sermon, I was like, that's it, man. Do we get that from the Lord? So when you feel the benediction, do you feel your Father saying to you, man, hit it again, man. I just love it that we're here. We're here in this batting cage and we're doing it. And man, you're awesome. And that is where your affirmation comes from. It has to come from that source. That's what Jesus is saying. Because he's here doing this. And the way up is the way down, right? The upside down gospel. Here's what I know, Jesus says. My Father loves me and I can do whatever. I can stand in front of Pilate and I feel the power of my Father and I will do whatever mission I need to do. And it's not about the power. It's about the truth. And then when the truth goes out and people's hearts change, then what? Then we can do some awesome things. Then we can actually help people. But abused power is a power as an end. And Pilate only has power. Ultimately, we find out that Pilate only has power because of what this next passage says. So look, listen to what happens to Jesus here. Who is power? Pilate's staring at him and he's like, okay, here we go. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and went up to him again and again, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and they slapped him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews gathered there, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." As soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify him! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him. The Jewish leaders insisted, we have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God. And we're going to end right here. When Pilate heard this guy claims to be the Son of God, he was even more afraid. And he went back inside the palace. Where do you come from? He asked Jesus. But Jesus gave him no answer. Do you refuse to speak to me? Pilate said. Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you? And here's Jesus' answer. You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. You don't know the truth. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin. Jesus says this to me and to you. I have the truth, right? The first interrogation that Pilate gives him, Jesus says, the reason I've come into this world is to bear witness for the truth. But how is he going to do it? Just by being a teacher? Is that it? Is that all Jesus was going to do? Just teach stuff? No, because at the end of this second interrogation, Pilate says this, I have the power to crucify you. And what does Jesus say? What does Jesus say to that power, that political power? He says, you only have that power because that's the plan. That's how I'm going to bear witness to the truth, ironically. You only have power because it's the plan that, you know what? I die. Do you want to know the Father, the Lord, utterly delights in you? And when you see Christ not coming to take power and to take glory, but to empty himself of his glory and to empty himself of his power and to die on the cross for you and for me, there and only there, what? Will you have the assurance that you and I need that he delights in us? And when that gets into my heart and when that can get into your heart for real, I believe, take political office, right? You take political office. You can go and handle being a rep in the House of Representatives. You go be mayor of Tampa. You go be governor. You follow Governor Rick Scott until you know that you're not ready. But when you know that, then as Christians, you know what? Political power is something that we can use. Political power is something that's okay. It's not bad in and of itself, how to run our state. Because as Christians in politics, we're never going to get up and say, I'm a Christian, therefore all you non-Christians, right? All you are going to be ostracized. We would never say that. Because we know that that's the best way to destroy Christianity if we do that. That's the fastest way. If we want to destroy our faith, legislate it. But we want people to know that their hearts can be filled with the truth of Jesus. And when you use that power, you use power instead of like putting it on like Pilate is. It's safe to use. And so, you know what? We can make this a better Tampa, a better Florida, a better United States of America, or not just in the political realm. You use whatever power or influence you have. That's when you're safe. That when that is etched into your heart, that's what Jesus is saying, because that's where I came from. You don't realize Jesus is saying that all of this is part of my plan. And so if you abuse it, Pilate, you're just going to bring your house down, right? Go ahead, Jesus says, destroy me. And all you'll do is put me on the cross. You'll put me on the cross and make me the savior of the world, Jesus says to us. And when you make me the emblem and the sign and a token and a power in the lives of people who are eventually going to what? Going to turn the entire Roman world upside down. That's what Pilate does, and he doesn't even know he's about to do it. That's our Jesus. By abusing your power, you're helping me show what power is for. And what's it for? It's for giving. It's for serving. It's for helping. Jesus came with all this power to do what? To give it all away. Man, the dichotomy between these two men, the paranoia, right? The peace of Jesus, the nervousness of Pilate. Hey, I'm just going to be what I am. And so if God gives anyone, right, the power to do something bad to you, you serve and you follow Jesus. That's what he says to us. Because what? All it will do in the end is accomplish the very opposite of what that person wants to do to you. Because real power is love. It is service. And every single time there was a martyr, the blood of the martyr was the seed of the church. Anytime anyone died because of Christ, the church grew. They gave their lives away. They sat there in the Colosseum and lions ripped them apart. And people came in droves because they knew what they had in their heart was real. That wasn't legislated stuff. That was, man, that was for real. And that's what Jesus came to do to you and to me. Where are you? What do you think of power? We should fear it, right? We should be nervous around it. But then if God has given that to you, if you understand this, use it for him. Give it away. Jesus, hey, we're walking to his death. And we've now interacted with this government official, this political power. How does Jesus deal with it? How do you deal with politics, right? How do you deal with power? That's what Jesus is asking us. He's calling us, right, to utter humility, to utter service for him. So let's give away gift cards, right? Let's give away our time, our water, our sweat, whatever. I mean, shoot, we got a whole 51st state here, Puerto Rico. What can we do for them? What can we do for one another? That's what power and influence does. Let's not try to protect it. Let's pray and ask.